and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, August 15th, 2019, otherwise known as Relaxation Day.
What is that, man?
A day to relax.
It's every day, bro. What are you talking about?
All I do is relax. Relax to the max. Ooh, that could be like a good 80s looking t-shirt. Probably already exists.
Nice. How do y'all relax? What's your go-to chill out? If you've got 2 hours.
Ooh. Honestly, probably like lay down and watch YouTube or something.
Nice. I thought you were about to hit us with that Nintendo Switch.
That's when I'm playing that, I'm all business, man. That's business time.
What about you, Ben? What do you got?
I think I just go and get another coffee and keep going.
That's not relaxing then.
Yeah,
I was about to say that's
it depends. I asked the question. I remember in like football practice a long time ago, the coach would always ask, are you hurt or are you injured? Right? Like meaning like,
oh yeah. Right.
I understand you're feeling the sensation of pain, but are you objective enough in the moment to actually assess whether or not there's significant damage or it's just your own lack of comfort?
Right. So yeah. I think, and just walk it off.
So I try to deal with fatigue in the same way. Is a sort of question, am I really exhausted? Is this something where I need to take a nap? Or am I just kind of flummoxed by not really sharing what the next step of a particular project is? Am I kind of procrastinating because there's something I have uncertainty about or I just don't enjoy doing? So I always start with that sort of question first. If I'm genuinely like exhausted and tired, and then yeah, resting is productive. It's not the absence of work. But you always want to, I think, make sure that it's not just a way of getting out of doing something that's unpleasant.
How often do you guys feel physically fatigued versus mentally fatigued?
I'm pretty much just always mentally fatigued, yeah. But not to be dramatic or anything, but no, it's kind of been funny out here working on the patio that I've been doing now that we're in the summer months. I'm kind of wrapping all of that project up, and that's kind of the unique time where I feel really physically drained, yeah. Where it's just like I'm ready to lay down and not do anything. Because typically just when I'm in the shop building the normal day-to-day things, it's never too taxing, you know what right. I mean? I've always got time and energy to kind of exercise a little bit at the end of the day. That gets me relaxed and then get into edit mode.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. Like it's, you know, your feet might be tired from standing all day or whatever, but it's not like you're digging a ditch or whatever, unless you're literally exactly. digging a ditch in a patio, which you may be doing. I don't know. Whew. But yeah, it's definitely mental fatigue. Just like, oh man, I've just been thinking about this too much. And like, I want a way to not think about it for a while. I've always heard that's what like a lot of people that are like, obviously you have to be, or you don't have to be wealthy to do this, but it tends to be kind of a wealthy person's hobby. And like probably people who have a lot of responsibilities, but like something like race car driving, it's like the type of thing where when you're doing it, you're completely disconnected from everything else because it requires so much attention. I think it would be nice to have something like that.
Yeah, me and
Nintendo.
It's kind of like you and Nintendo.
Yeah.
My bad. I didn't mean to talk over you there.
No, but it's true. Like to have something like what's a good poor man's version of like a thing that you could do where like it requires so much concentration that you can't have those other thoughts
like
in the back
of your head. Rock climbing or surfing are kind of like that. Or even people that do anything where there's, I mean, skateboarding, if you're doing it in like kind of like a dangerous situation where you're going downhill fast.
Yeah, just trying to get me to kill myself.
Right. Anything where it requires you to
not
be
die.
In that moment and not be distracted allows you to sort of temporarily kind of just forget about all the superfluous stuff because you're so focused on just surviving that moment.
For me, that's boom. Laser tag. Not really.
Wow.
There's got to be like laser tag leagues or something.
Dude, it's funny that you say that. This weekend, I got a group of the boys together on Saturday and we went to a place downtown where they've got laser tag and mini golf. And I've not done either of those since I was maybe 12.
Junior high, yeah.
Yeah, so we played some slightly drunk laser tag and mini golf. It's for adults too, man.
How'd you do?
I mean, I didn't win anything. I did hit a hole in one playing mini golf.
Nice.
But laser tag seems like a kid's game. Also great for adults.
Also great for a few injuries.
Yeah, exactly. We're like squatting up. It was us. In a room completely full of like 10 and 12 year olds getting all suited up. Yeah. There's like 7 full grown men over here throwing on their vests and everything, just ready to completely slaughter these
little
kids. It'd
be funny if they're all made for them though. So like, you're just like busting out of them.
Yeah,
just doing, it's like we're playing a game a little of Call jacket.
Of it's like we're playing Call of Duty in real life. Like everybody's like checking, like checking each other. Like we're going through the maze, like watching each other's back. And collectively, our team annihilated the other one.
I got eyes on target.
Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty much what I've been doing this week.
What about?
Which is kind of the traditional format of this show. What are you guys working on this week?
Yeah, Ben, you shared an interesting picture with us. Care to share?
Yeah, so I just finished assembling the 3D printed cabinet that I've been working on. I've been teasing it for a long time. And I was trying to think about how I want to incorporate 3D printed projects into sort of what I'm doing. And I think what I'm going to do is just do a new sub-series just called 3D printed furniture. Because, I mean...
Straight to the point.
What's it going to be about? I'm so curious.
So yeah,
it just deals with that broadly as a topic.
Yeah,
and because I think doing a, you know, making the title of the video be about I made a 3D printed cabinet. That's not anything anyone's looking for, but it's part of a broader topic that I think is interesting, which involves how do you print big things on small printers. How do you incorporate 3D printers into sort of the type of build projects that we're doing? And I think most importantly, what is the potential of these machines, not just to replace existing tools, but to actually allow new production capabilities that previously weren't there? So
yeah,
those will be the common themes anytime I do a video on 3D printed furniture. And that way it'll be much more of a series that collectively addresses those topics in different ways.
So on this project, you basically built a kind of a spin on the wardrobe that you did recently, but instead of a wooden frame, you did an all 3D printed frame, right?
Right.
Are there going to be pictures of this already out when the podcast goes live? Are you going to tease it?
Yeah, they'll probably be. It'll be close either way. But, you know, you should be following me on Instagram anyways.
At Benjamin Ueda.
You'll find it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So with this project, I was really trying to approach lightweight construction. And if you think about if you were to make a checklist of what a printer is good at and not good at, it's good at accuracy and repetition, right? Because you're printing digitally and the tolerances are pretty fine, even with I have pretty good 3D printers from Matter Hackers, but even with like a cheap 3D printer, like it's still pretty precise. So precision's great. The materials tend to be kind of lightweight, so I wanted to utilize that. So I want to use precision, lightweightness. The liabilities are that it's slow, and you can't print things that are big. So I was thinking, like, where is a case where, you know, lightweight brackets would be useful?
Space shuttle.
So I said, wall hanging cabinets or anything sort of hanging onto wall.
Yeah.
So not a big stretch, no genius there. Then from there, I was thinking, well, it's not like an aluminum L bracket is that heavy.
Right.
So you're not really doing that. I'm like, well, let's figure out a way to make the structural system actually the aesthetically interesting part of it, or maybe that provides a secondary function. And that's where I came up with the idea. Well, let's do the structure for the cabinet outside of the cabinet and then the panels inside of the structure.
Right.
So we used conduit, 3D printed joints, and then polycarbonate, which is also super lightweight, to make a cabinet that really, you know, I cut the panels with a circular saw and drilled a few holes with a drill, and then, you know, put some screws in to kind of fasten it all together. But everything else was just 3D printed and epoxied. So I actually think if I was to do it again, I probably wouldn't even use polycarbonate. I'd probably use either like wood veneers, so they could just all be 3D printed, and then like X-Acto knife, I think would be like a really interesting combination for super lightweight stuff. And then
do you think that that's like a strong consideration with this idea of like a series on 3D printed furniture is eliminating as many woodworking tools as you can, thinking like, oh, that's a whole new group of people. The people that are my primary tool is a 3D printer. Everything else is auxiliary. Because most of the people in kind of our space typically use table saws, circular saws, and then kind of use a 3D printer as an auxiliary tool.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking of it as the opposite. Like, let's use that as a primary with just a few accessories around.
That's fun.
It.
Yeah.
So the other thing I was thinking a lot about is cosplay, which is funny because I've never done a cosplay project.
I want to see you. That'll be good.
Who should it be?
I don't know. I was thinking about it. I couldn't come up with anything.
I'm not going to do one. But here's how I was thinking about
Banjo
it relative
Kazooie.
To this project. It's I'm not interested in so much cosplay as that I feel like it's just a little bit too linear. Or too direct. Like, oh, I like this movie, so I like this thing from it. I'm more trying to think of how do you take like a sci-fi movie and use that as inspiration for something that you actually can use. And so that's what I was sort of thinking for this piece. So it's not quite cosplay, which makes things, you know, which are fantastic for kind of, you know, fun and novelty collector's items and all that stuff, which is all awesome. Like I think it's great. But what I'm really interested in is like, I really like the art direction of that remake of that movie Tron.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Movie wasn't great, but the art direction was phenomenal. Like same thing with like Westworld's like kind of similar in a lot of ways. Westworld's not, I feel like, the most interesting show, but it looks fantastic. Like that intro sequence is bananas. So I was thinking, well, like I think it'd be fun to do more space age looking stuff. Yeah. I like the aesthetic of Star Wars. I like those kind of sceneries and those kind of aesthetic visions. But let's use those to actually not make direct replicas of things. Let's just make actual usable pieces that are kind of pulling from some of those aesthetic palettes.
So I got to ask Chris, did this meet space age Japanese requirements?
I would say so. I think it's got that space age Japanese aesthetic.
Yeah, it's funny that you went down. Deco.
Exactly. It's funny that you went down that whole tangent of, you know, the whatever the universe of a movie or a sci-fi thing is and having that be directing the creative a lot. Because whenever you sent us the photos before we recorded this podcast of that cabinet, the thing that I immediately thought of was if there was a white version of the Death Star from Star Wars, where everything was like bleach white, but still the same general aesthetic.
It's funny, I was pulling actual geometry and kind of 3D modeling techniques from directly looking at like Art Deco details, but it looks more like details from like the exterior of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's all like built on top of itself, which is, I don't know, kind of unique to Star Wars.
Right. There's sort of like a haphazard geometric compilation of shapes on top of shapes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's a technology that got so advanced that they no longer needed to worry about aerodynamics.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. It's like, we're going to be like the Millennium Falcon's like the most bulky thing in the world.
Put another protrusion on it right there.
Yeah.
Overall, though, I would say my takeaways from sort of this project is that I think are hopefully are relatable is that we all often find ourselves talking about like, oh, I kind of want to do this, but I can't do this because this is what my business is or that. And sometimes that's true, but there's always kind of a way around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like to say, oh, 3D printed projects don't do well on YouTube or these things. But there's always, you know, who knows if this will or won't. But there's always like a slightly different take on it.
Mm-hmm.
So even the thumbnails and stuff like that will be much more less about a cabinet and more about, you know, probably it'll be of like a detail of the polycarbonate with the 3D printed parts with the conduit all going into it.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, you know, episode one of 3D printed furniture.
That's so awesome. Yeah. But so, I really dig all your projects where it's an hour of work here, 2 hours of work here, spanning over a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of projects that I really enjoy seeing from you. They tend to have like, yeah, exactly. They have like the biggest payoff, I think. They're really great. And yeah, I do like that idea of a 3D printed series. It's really cool.
Yeah. So that also led me to looking at patterns. So I just got a Shaper Origin in the mail.
Oh, it arrived.
It arrived. It's pretty cool.
Time out. Just so you guys know, for the people that don't remember or didn't listen, this guy has probably bashed on Shaper Origins more than anybody else.
Well,
like that's kind of like in our world.
I'll defend you, Ben.
Thin slice that. What did I actually say, Chris?
I would say, yeah. I wouldn't say that he bashed them. I would say that there was this like initial reaction that people had that like, this is the end all be all tool. And like, when you step back, that's not necessarily the case, but it still has its applications.
Oh, right. I get it. Where a lot of people were just like, forget about the X carve. This is it now.
Right.
Okay.
So the way I remember it is people said
in my world,
yeah,
this is going to revolutionize making. This is going to be the only tool that you need. You can do everything with this thing. And I said, that's fine if you want to stand there for long periods of times, moving it really slowly.
Right.
Which is a drawback of the machine versus a conventional CNC. The advantage is that it has CNC machine capabilities that you could pack up and travel with you.
And that
So for the people that don't already know what a Shaper Origin is, it's essentially a CNC put into the body of a router. So instead of the material being, you know, in the bed of the CNC and that running around, you just move it around like you would a router, and then it does all the micro adjustments for you.
Right.
There we go.
Yeah, and the other advantage would be that it isn't bound to a size.
Exactly.
So if a CNC machine is a robot, this is a cyborg, where it's requiring some biological intelligence of the human to basically operate it as the gantry, and then it operates at the sort of fine detail, sort of cutting out exactly along the lines.
I guess technically you could build like a gantry that would move it around, and it could be like CNC Inception. Inception.
So it's
there'd be no upside for that, though.
There would not. Just be very extra expensive.
So I'm very intrigued by that concept, the same way that I think like artificial intelligence is interesting. But right now, I think what's more interesting are things like Reddit, which are sort of a combination, right? Where it's sort of a digital structuring of organic intelligence. So Uber kind of operates as the same system, where it's like a bunch of human drivers, but kind of organized within this overall sort of digital system. So I think what I'm excited to explore is like how Shaper is different than using a CNC.
Yeah.
So I reached out to them and said, look, I have some very specific applications where this tool is going to make a lot of sense. I'm going to be doing a lot of like traveling builds, both for, you know, Andrew Schultz's studio in New York. And this is something I can put in my carry-on luggage and take with me. It would be hard to take a large-scale CNC. And then for those situations, what it lacks in, speed and just the requirement of actually having an operator standing there operating the whole time. Like I've done a lot of CNC projects that required 40 to 50 hours of cut time. That's going to be kind of, you know, doing the spiral staircase with this thing, you could totally do it. It would be pretty rough. It'd be a lot of standing.
It'd almost be easier to just get a traditional like router template bit
exactly.
And then just be able to batch them out that way. Yeah.
But for doing like signage or details or having actually building it, and in this case, we'll be doing a lot of fabrication for the studio in the studio. So that'll be really nice. I'll have a laptop where I could like quickly draw something up, cut out an exact piece and sort of infill. So for sort of those kind of advanced remodeling projects is where I think it'll really shine. But yeah, I'm excited to break it out and start using it. I had Eric from Cutworks was here and he uses one quite a bit in all of his sort of professional builds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he gave me really good advice saying that it takes, you know, you actually have to maintain a consistent speed with your hands. It's not sort of foolproof, and sort of gave me a lot of sort of caveats on about how to sort of effectively work it in. But yeah, more tech is always fun.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, the other thing too, is like the more of you get of these things, there's such a, you get used to CNCing and then you switch over to 3D printing and you're like, wait, what am I doing? And I know I'm going to switch from 3D printing over this thing, but wait, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But all that has led me to start researching patterns. So one of the main reasons I'm interested in doing this is I really liked the way your plywood floor came out, Mike.
Thank you.
And I think pattern and texture is such a cool way to brighten up a space. And there's just not that many off-the-shelf options for flooring. Like there's a million different colors and shades and tints and stains and stuff like that. But when you actually talk to like the shape of the floorboards, like pretty boring.
<standard. laughs>
Oh, we got wide planks. Or we got less wide planks. But there's no fish scale ones. There's no like crazy geometric patterns. I mean, your diamond patterned one that's not an incredibly complex type of geometry.
No, it's one shape. Yeah.
But for flooring, people were like blown away because it's just rare that you see any diagonal in flooring unless it's like a herringbone, which, you know, a little played out. But so I was like researching different types of like mathematical patterns, and I came across this really cool website where this guy His name's David Bailey, and its website is the title of the website isn't the actual address, but it's called like David Bailey's World of Escher Like Tessellations.
.com.
Okay. Yeah. So the domain is tess-elation.co.uk. And I think he looks like some sort of like mathematical professor or grad student. And he did a bunch of studies about the artist M.C. Escher and like the way he created sort of the math behind his patterns and how he sort of went about doing that. And I was like, oh, wow, here's some patterns that are pretty cool. Right. So if hexagons are like kind of like the basic kind of like, hey, let's go one step away from sort of like shiplap or kind of rectangular boards, I'd say that's like the next level up. And then like diamonds are kind of a level up from that. This is like a level of pattern that's even a step beyond that. And that's the kind of stuff that I'm going to be experimenting with. And I think the shaper is going to be a big part of that.
I'm excited to see it. Yeah. I'm excited to hear about kind of like the build quality and like how it feels when you're using it. Because am I right in thinking that they got acquired by Festool? Am I right or wrong there?
It uses a Festool router.
It uses a Festool router.
I think
router.
That you're right, though, Mike. That does sound right.
Something along those lines. But anyways, all that like leads me to think like, this thing is probably going to be beefy and like feel like weighted and good. So hopefully it does.
I mean, I can tell you that Festool router is beefy.
Awesome. As you said. That's cool.
Officially it's a beefy rated. Router. Chris gives it the stamp of
beefiness. Beefy. 100% beef. Just USDA officially grade beefy. A.
Awesome. Well, Chris, what's been happening in your shop?
All right. So I'm going to tell you, but doing that requires me to talk about the next challenge. So let's do that right after this break. That's what I call a tease. This week's episode is brought to you by Simple Habit.
Everybody deals with stressful situations in their life, usually more often than we would like, and going on a solo self-improvement journey is easier said than done. But don't worry, Simple Habit is here to help with both of those things. Simple Habit is an app geared towards busy people who are looking to take a short window out of their day to find a little bit of inner peace or to relieve a little bit of stress. One of my favorite things about Simple Habit is that they've got hundreds of meditations for free without entering any of your credit card info. They know that they've got an amazing app and that once you give it a shot, you'll sign up for a premium membership which unlocks thousands of meditations. Simple Habit meditations are guided by over 100 experts, so you're sure to find a voice that speaks to you. They're also practical and convenient. Whether you're on your way to or from work or in the workshop, Simple Habit has short meditations that can be consumed in about 5 minutes. All this week, I've been doing quick, 5-minute meditations called Before Work. Oftentimes, I just wake up and jump right into my day rather than taking a moment to appreciate the day itself and focus my mind to have a more productive day. Simple Habit is the number one ranked meditation keyword in the iOS App Store. It's got over 65,000 five-star reviews, and it was Google Play's 2008 Standout Wellbeing App Award winner.
So go to simplehabit.com/modernmaker to get 30% off a premium subscription for the first 50 listeners. So that's simplehabit.com/modernmaker. Seriously, we can all use a little more peace of mind. And hey, most of us have our phone on us pretty much all the time. So check it out and go to simplehabit.com/modernmaker.
Okay, so a lot of people have been asking when the next challenge is coming up. So this is the unofficial announcement of it. It's going to be coming very soon. But to talk about what I'm working on kind of requires to talk about what the theme of the challenge is, which many people have already guessed is going to have to do with bent wood.
Yeah.
Again, we'll talk about all the like official rules and timelines and all that stuff later on in this month.
Now, before you go on.
Yeah.
We should call it the bent lamination challenge, not the bent wood challenge, because I don't want to have that hashtag.
we're doing Rockler bent wood because it's more open. Because I guess technically bent lamination would like rule out steam bending, kerf bending.
Dang. All right. Hey, man, if we want to go bent wood, we can go bent wood.
We're doing
but
it.
But I just think there's a glaring pun that we just need to be aware of.
Let's just own it.
All right. Great. We're owning it.
It's ours. This is our corner. Get off it. So anyway.
Whoa.
I started working on the project, which I'm going to do. This is one of those projects that I'm like really hoping I'm not jinxing myself, because like who knows how well it's going to actually come out. Like, The idea is I've been wanting to do something with shoes for a long time, some sort of like shoe display. So I came up with an idea for a shoe shelf where part of it's flat and part of it's like this kind of wave that goes along behind it, so that the shoes that are on display will kind of have like a walking look to them. Like,
okay, so they'll be alternating heights.
Yeah, like one will be flat and the other one will be like slightly in front of it and at an angle as if they were walking.
I see. Got it.
Okay, so that's the idea. It's crazy building this thing because like it's weird making one of something that's like a bent lamination thing where you have to build a huge form for it, because it's taking, like, I'm on day two of building the form. I'll probably quit for today pretty soon and then like hopefully finish off the form tomorrow. So it's like you do all this prep work and then like the whole actionable part of it's going to come down to like 30 minutes where like you've done these like, you know, 20 hours of preparation to hopefully get these 30 minutes right. I mean, it would be the type of thing that I guess if it, you know, the form you'll have. So theoretically you could keep making them over and over. Obviously I'm not going to do that, but like, you know, if you were developing a product or something, you could in theory use it for that. But I don't think that that should dissuade anybody from doing it. Like, I'm making my whole form, even though it's a lot of work, it's all MDF. So it's not like expensive material wise. I think it's going to be a really good learning tool for being able to implement, you know, other ideas. Like, it's something that I've wanted to get into for a long time and just have avoided because of, I don't know, intimidation or whatever. But like, I'm glad we're doing this challenge because it's definitely pushing me into doing it. And I hope that's the case for a lot of people that like see this as something that's a little bit more intimidating than, you know, plywood or two by fours or whatever. But there'll be a lot of people doing it and we're going to make sure there's ample time to do it. So yeah, I think it's a really good opportunity to try.
I'm excited for it for that exact same reason. I've sort of pushed off doing some sort of like bent wood or bent lamination just out of just not knowing how to do it. And so I don't want to dedicate the time to figuring it out.
Right.
But this gives us a great opportunity to do that and kind of do it with a bunch of other people and sort of share that knowledge.
Right.
And get the knowledge from the people participating as well.
Yeah. Like,
but what I'm excited about. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to just say, think of how, if, you know, hopefully it all goes well, but like what a resource will have been created by the hive of people doing this that can exist in 3 months from now.
Exactly. And so what I'm really excited about this is we're all sort of doing different things. Chris, you're doing an MDF form and working kind of with veneer strips, right?
Exactly.
Which is going to be super clean. And I think that's exactly what you should do. Like, that's very Four Eyes. That's exactly your thing. But with mine is I'm going to be getting like a steam bending kit so that I can build a steam bending box and kind of just go more chunky with everything and bend 2x4s. Nice. And so mine's not going to be necessarily bent laminated, although I'll have bent pieces of wood glued together. Right. It's going to be more of a steam bending project overall. And then, you know, maybe you want to do a plywood project with kerf cuts, like what you mentioned, Chris. Like, there's just so many options to get some sort of contour through wood, but we're all doing it collectively and figuring it out, which is going to be really fun.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's obviously those are three ways that I'm sure people will come up with other things. We, you know, we're always very lenient on what the rules are in terms of these. So the official rules will be up in a couple of weeks, but I'm going to guess that it's going to be something that along the lines of a project that has some sort of bent wood as a predominant feature of the build.
Exactly. Yeah. Ben, have you thought much about what you're thinking about doing, or maybe whether you're trying to start with tackling a specific process or trying to start with a particular end result? Like, where are you approaching it from?
I have a few ideas. So one of them, I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to do the bent lamination for the structure of the piece that I work on or for the skin of the piece.
Mm.
So I might do like a CNC frame that has sort of curves that are cut into like a two-dimensional profile, but then it's skinned with some sort of bent or curved lamination process to kind of close it all up. And you know, it was weird. I was actually looking at some leather cushions, and I was looking at like how there's a really simple type of cushion where the seams are just like pancaked between two pieces, and they're just sewn together in the most simple way possible. So if you were just to take two square pieces of leather, stitch around the edges, and then stuff it full, they would kind of taper towards the edges because they're just very simple seams. There's not actually like, you know, a three-dimensional pattern cut to fit around the foam or whatever the cushion material is.
Yeah, you know what they call those?
A hot pocket.
No, flapjack cushions.
Flapjack cushions, right?
Let's start calling them hot pocket cushions.
Nope.
Trademark. So, ding, Hot pocket.
I've been thinking about like what would be the wood equivalent of that, because that's something I feel like I haven't seen.
Okay.
Oh, so if you got like veneers and then attached them at the corners and stuffed it.
Yeah.
I think that would be wood a great cushion. Opportunity for some, like a great opportunity for some sort of like light shade or something, almost making like a wooden balloon and then having a light inside of it.
Or a lounge chair.
Ooh, that is fun. That's very IKEA-esque as well. I like that a lot.
Beanbag chair.
Also, are you familiar with the artist Jeff Koons?
I might be, but not off top.
He makes those big, shiny balloon animal bunnies made out of steel.
I still don't know.
So you've probably seen those kind of like inflated steel sculpture things where it's like two pieces of steel. They make like a steel pillow and they inflate it with air and it kind of blows it up. So it's like steel, but it's crinkly.
Yeah.
So it doesn't move. It's like a completely static one of those shiny balloons. So I feel like there's a way to make something like that out of wood. So I haven't fully thought about it yet, but I have like two or three ideas that I'll probably start all three at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And see which one works.
Right. It'll sort of be like, you know, a very evolutionary process of seeing like, the weakest one dies.
Yeah.
And we keep going with the strong ones.
Yeah, there we go. This is the one I'm doing. The one that actually
came out. Cool.
That was actually one of my first thoughts to do was some sort of like, I've never done anything with lighting. And so I've been wanting to do that. And we were kind of talking about this offline. Mike told me it's called a swag kit, right? When it's like the whole lighting thing and like, you know, where you get all the parts you need in one purchase or whatever.
Just kind of like one of those classic, like color cord kind of pendant lamp kits.
Yeah. So that's actually what I got, a color cord. Yeah. So it'd be like a pendant light with the canopy and the wire. It's all hooked up already. And I think it's even called a shade ready. I don't know where you put the light bulb receptacle. Who knows?
Yeah. The fixture itself, whatever it's called. The socket. I'm sure. Yeah.
Sounds about right. Yeah. So I got one of those. And I was thinking about doing very similar to what Ben was talking about, where I would just like CNC some sort of structure and then have it where I could just put pieces of wood in there, not even have to glue them. Like they could literally just be loose in there and then it would just like have that thing to hold the shape of it.
Yeah.
And then I still do want to do that as a project just because it sounds fun to do. But I thought, all right, for this one though, I'm going full force and using glue.
Wow.
Doing it, going all the way. Horses, watch out.
Yeah, I'm excited to see some people make something with like a vacuum press, because form stuff is really cool. But whenever you're using a vacuum press, you can create like really clean three-dimensional kind of shapes out of stuff.
Yeah,
like maybe form it like around a basketball or a volleyball or something. So you get like a cool like half sphere dome that you can make it as a pendant light or something. That'd
my
be fun.
Prediction is going to be that participation, hopefully it's still high. I could see where maybe it's a little bit lower just because it's more intimidating to some people. But I hope that, and I think we're going to see some crazy stuff come out of this.
I agree with you. We saw some crazy stuff
come out of the 2x4 challenge and the plywood challenge that like, there's no way we would have thought of that stuff. And I think we're going to see some crazy stuff come out of this.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a way you could do almost like a wood veneer scrap version of paper mache.
Yeah.
Like I one of the things I was thinking about as a technique, and I don't know if it's worked, feel free to test it on your own, would be to get a whole bunch of just random little scraps of veneers, like small pieces, like the size of sort of like paint, you know, swatch cards and stuff like that. So just total throwaway little edge pieces and stuff.
Yeah.
Soak them all in water or steam them to get them real pliable and flexible. Take a big stainless steel mixing bowl, fill it full of concrete, pull out the concrete. So now you have a mold, like the one I'm using for the plastic bags. Then you just throw in those wood chips, a bunch of glue, and then put the concrete weight inside the thing. So you're basically pressing, like you're basically making a bowl out of like hardwood OSB chips. I think something like that could be really interesting. And if the pieces are small, that's actually good because, you know, with a one directional curve, you can use long pieces. When you're curving it like a bowl around a sphere, you need to curve pieces in two directions. So I think something like a technique like that could be really fun and low cost and a great way to experiment. So I think Chris brought up a good point about participation. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. If you have an idea for a spectacular build, by all means, like send it, like go big.
Yeah.
Like that's what these are all about. And like, you know, we saw that with the plywood challenge. I mean, people made freaking paddle boards and just incredible stuff.
Yeah.
But this is also a great way to experiment with a wild technique that's low stakes in terms of material and also the amount of time investment. So it's a, you know, a project like I just described is like, you know, a $20 one weekend long project. And if it works, it could be a great technique to add to the arsenal that you then sort of build more substantial projects off of.
Yeah, right. It's funny you said that. I was about to say it's a $20 one weekend project with a 50% chance of failure. But if it does work, totally worth it. Exactly.
Let's try three of those.
Yeah, I was gonna say, there you go. You can't fail statistically.
Well, it's kind of like the last challenge we did. We kind of learned after the 2x4 challenge, which was our first one, that there's going to be people coming into the challenge that are kind of at two separate tiers. You've got the guy that's like the maker that has a ton of experience and also has a shop that's outfitted to basically do anything they want. And then you've got the people that are more DIY, kind of like where, you know, where I'm coming from and that sort of thing. And so whenever we did the plywood challenge, we realized that. And so we made sure to sort of like categorize things. And that's kind of how we chose winners of like, this is the guy that won for making just the best piece all around, you know, no holds barred. And then here's the guy that was, you know, sort of like the most creative, you know, approach or something like really ingenious that way. And I think we should do the same thing with this one where, you know, we really give people credit due for experimenting and thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
But also really give credit to the people that are maybe have a little bit of experience and they are kind of at a place where they can make something outstanding, something better than either of us or any of us are going
to
do.
Yeah, I'm sure there's people out there who are listening that, you know, maybe have never felt compelled to make a video or an Instagram post that have a ton of experience doing stuff like this. And maybe this is the thing that like gets it out there and like will be such a great tool for other people to use moving forward. I know a lot of people have kind of launched or like kicked off their channels from these channels. So again, it's a great opportunity for that. Yeah. Rockler's sponsoring it again. There's going to be prizes.
Yeah. And shout out to Rockler, man. Rockler's amazing.
I know.
Like we came to them with the challenge.
They were
They didn't really bat an eye at it. They're just like, yeah, we just want to keep being involved. So they're awesome, man.
For sure. And we are going to have a slightly longer timeline that the challenge will be open this time because we know that, you know, people might have to spend a little bit more time either thinking or building.
And also, I know it's the bent wood challenge, but let's go really outside of the box.
Rockler bent wood. Final answer.
I'm okay. So here's an idea. Even if you're kerf bending, you are kind of laminating the piece together. Like you do use glue still, you know? You think we should keep bent wood?
I think we should keep bent wood.
All right,
there's so many innuendos in woodworking anyway.
Bent laminated steel.
And that's where I was sitting at, is your thought was exactly the same thought I had until I realized it was called the bent wood challenge. Of if it was the bent laminated challenge, we could be bent laminating colored pencils together. Or it could be bent laminating steel or anything like that. But maybe that's for another time.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we're the type of people that probably if you did something with steel, we're not going to be like, nope, sorry. Like, look, you know, I think we're all lenient people, but...
That's a good point. You're right. So if you've got a crazy idea like that, it qualifies for our challenge.
Do great work that you're passionate about and use the rules to help you get that done, not to stop you from getting that done.
There we're just trying to create a launching point. We're not trying to set a set of guidelines that stop your creative flow. We're trying to get it boosted.
With anything, do your best work and trust that that best work will allow you to participate in greater community activities. Don't look at the community's rules because you know what? The community's most important priorities are not about the rules. They're about the sort of people and interaction and the learning and all the excitement that comes with sharing ideas. So don't hold yourself back by saying like, well, I had to follow the rules and this is, you know, article 2B point paragraph 3 said, you know, it can only be this type. No, don't get lost in the details. Focus on the big ideas, the big challenges, or just the things that you're curious about and go after those.
Yeah, make something out of metal and just sprinkle a little sawdust on it. Good to go.
And to go back to the previous challenges again, we had, especially on the first one, but it happened on the second one as well, of people reaching out like, hey man, I've got this idea. I don't know if it's quite within the rules. There was not a single person that we said no to.
Yeah, I don't think there was one. It was like, cool.
Yeah, because we're just building a launch pad that we can all kind of start from a common place on. And that's the cool part about it is how diverse the end results end up being. Like, that's the exciting part. So feed into that big time.
Yeah. Can you imagine bending, though, without lamination? Like, I'm sure, I know it's
steam bending.
But it's like you would almost always then anchor it with after.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like that idea of
the canoes are kind of
I guess, but you're laminating it to a frame. Yeah, yeah, you create a frame and then laminate over it.
And then fiberglass over that.
The steam bending, those pieces will hold their shape.
They will.
You know, once you let them dry like that. I think there's like a little bit of spring back, and I think it's even calculable, if that's a word.
Yeah. But even if you consider kind of like a real common one is like handrails or something like that. If you bend those, they're still getting anchored to
the post,
to the structure of the posts anyways. So there's always some sort of anchoring that it seems like outside of, you know, some like IKEA lounge chair or something like, I keep picturing there's one specific IKEA chair where it's just a traditional like lounge chair and it's all kind of bent laminated pieces together. It's kind of one of those. Yeah, it's one of those classic affordable IKEA pieces that are all over the place.
I think it really is Poeng.
Yeah, exactly. I think you are right. But that's kind of like my classic example of whenever I think about like a really functional bent laminated project.
I always like that piece. We used to have one of those. And it's funny because like, because it's IKEA, like it gets less credit than I think it deserves. But if that was just
so
like
smart,
some dude that just made it, you'd be like, holy crap, this thing's awesome.
Yeah. No joke. I mean, listen, as much as you can hate on IKEA for what they're building things out of, they're freaking genius. And they're making a lot cooler stuff than what you're going to get at Wayfair or Overstock, you know?
Yeah, they've been a huge net benefit, not only in terms of just like making things on the cheap, but in terms of from a design perspective, I think they've, at least for people that are into the sort of stuff that we're into, I think they've been a very positive.
Oh, who hates on IKEA? IKEA is amazing.
I know. Well, it's just the classic. I was about to say it's the classic like woodworker stance of like,
yeah,
oh man, I hate it because they're using like fiberboard or they're using particle board on stuff.
Yeah, I think there's people that would make comments to people like us that would assume that, oh, you must hate IKEA.
Right.
When it's the opposite is true. Like, I think that it's amazing how they've elevated design and simplicity.
Yeah,
and made
in fact,
mass consumed.
I've got a question for you guys. What are the stores like IKEA? Because whenever I walk into IKEA, I leave with like 50 project ideas because there's just like a little rabbit hole that you go down. And I think a lot of it is just the sheer volume of things. Like there's just so many opportunities to have a little light bulb moment when you walk through there. And being from Oklahoma City, where the closest one is basically in Dallas, it's like I go there once every year or once every other year. So whenever I'm there, it's kind of like a whole new store every time I soak it in. What are some other like resources that are kind of really basic and everywhere, but just super valuable when you go?
That's a good question. Shoe stores. No.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that. I like shoes.
I think Restoration Hardware is a really interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not really my favorite style. It's a little more sumptuous and decadent and big, but they are, as a business, they are killing it. And they're doing really contrarian business thinking things that are paying off huge for them. So at a time when a lot of people are kind of like cutting back on spending money on big retail experiences, they're doubling down and creating sort of amazing atmospheres and places.
Yeah.
Mike, when we were in Beverly Hills, you know, we went to that one, the Restoration Hardware there, which is, it's amazing. And like people are just hanging out on the roof deck of their like working on a laptop, having coffee. It's like a lounge.
Exactly.
I've never been to one. Like how much is their furniture, like what's a coffee table cost or something like that?
It's all there's a pretty big range, but they're meant
High end. It's the high end of the kind of like that sort of market, you know. It's definitely more expensive than any kind of like IKEA or basic thing like that, but
it's like the furniture equivalent of like Mercedes or BMW, kind of like upper sedans,
consumer luxury.
Right.
Luxury consumer.
What kind of stuff? Who are we in the automotive equivalent analogy?
We're DeLorean.
Mike's making DeLoreans.
We're going to be gone soon, but
Mike's
going to
be in
last.
Jail any minute now.
The other thing, what was so brilliant about them is they noticed that the upscale clientele was living in bigger and bigger suburban houses. And so they developed bigger and bigger pieces of furniture. So they created these massive sofas that are just like bigger than a lot of people's apartments
and just absurd wardrobes,
and a lot of them are really comfortable too. Like some of their sofas are really awesome.
Yep.
So I think they're an interesting one for anyone that's in sort of furniture design to just get as a reference point. I think, you know, a lot of people in the design community kind of turned their nose up at them because they saw it as like, they saw them as sort of like the Cheesecake Factory of furniture design.
That's actually a really good analogy.
And
not necessarily in a bad way, but yeah.
But hey, in the pinch, Cheesecake Factory's
exactly. It's reliable.
Yeah, better now.
Drive my Mercedes there any day.
Yeah. So I think that's an interesting one. Muji, I think, is always great. I'm not the biggest fan of their furniture, but I think they utilize plastic better than anyone and making really elegant plastic organizational goods. Also, awesome sketchbooks. And yeah, other than that, like, I mean, I just like going to museums too in any
yeah.
city.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of other places that are just kind of, you know, in every major city. I always love going to Urban Outfitters. Because yeah. each of the stores are kind of allotted a certain amount for them to build a unique store. Like, yeah, it's not every store is the same. They use a bunch of plywood, a bunch of 2x4s. Because I actually got connected with somebody on Instagram that used to do store build outs for Urban Outfitters. And we've messaged back and forth a little bit. And, you know, they don't have the hugest budget in the world, but they've sort of got all the creative freedom. And that's sort of where I'm coming from as well, is, you know, I'm trying to be creative, but not use too inaccessible materials or tools. And so whenever I walk into one of those stores, it's always like, oh, whoa, look at what they just did with 2x4s, or look at how they used OSB in some kind of weird way.
Right. I mean, I remember liking Chipotle for the same reason when they first opened up. Like, I was like, oh, it's got kind of a different look to it, like industrial, kind of modern, minimalistic look to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when you started talking about Urban Outfitters, just the aesthetic that popped into my head was like, OSB and white paint for some reason. I don't know if that's true, but that's like what popped into my head.
Yeah, I think things have graduated a little bit warmer, like these days, to using a little bit more kind of plywood and a little bit less white on everything. I think that whole kind of, well, we were talking about it last week with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that whole idea of kind of like 70s warmth is really kind of finding its way into retail a lot these days. Even pattern, you know, I think the 70s were real big on patterns, right? That was sort of when a lot of like real unique kind of like that and kind of in mid-century where you had like a bunch of parquet floor or you had a bunch of like crazy, just like funky art kind of all over the place. And then things sort of got a little bit more sterile again, like in the 80s from what I've seen. And so it's kind of fun. It's cool because you're just seeing a lot more organic shapes getting messed around with.
Yeah.
And it's fun to see because that's just a lot of what we don't do. A lot of what we are making is angular and square. So it's interesting seeing a lot of like sweeping and organic curves showing up in places.
And the perfect time to experiment with such shapes is during the
Bentwood Challenge.
Rockler Bentwood Challenge.
That's right. But yeah, I'm excited for this challenge, man. It's going to be so much fun. So we're going to be announcing it officially towards the end of the month. But kind of last time, we kind of teased it a few weeks ahead of time. That way people could start getting that idea generation happening and figuring out a little bit of the problem solving before. Right. You know, the timer was on. So
start thinking.
If you've got any logistical questions or if you think your project is not going to fit within our constraints, let me assure you that it will.
It will. Yeah.
But don't even need bother to ask us. I was about to say, if you feel like you need to ask us, you can ask us. But the answer is pretty much yes.
Yeah. Now we're going to get a bunch of people just asking like crazy questions to see what we can say yes to.
Yeah. Oh, there you go, Chris. You need to do a bent crayon challenge where you just heat it up to where it becomes like it retains its shape, but it can curve.
There you go.
Yeah.
The bent crayon challenge. That'll be a very specific challenge. We'll do that next. Crayola hashtag.
That's a micro. It's a micro challenge.
Yeah.
What are you guys obsessed with this week? What have you been watching? What have you been consuming? In fact, I'm going to make a rule.
Let's hear it.
It can't be a TV show.
What?
But it can be anything else. It can be on YouTube. It can be on Instagram. It can be a
podcast.
Just
for this week, though.
Yeah. No more Netflix shows. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. Okay. I will not choose a Netflix show this week, at least. I'll actually choose. There was this video that I watched. I stumbled upon it. It was probably like a week ago. And the channel, it was a channel I never heard of called Potato Jet. Let me look it up. Potato Jet. Yeah. And I'm assuming that they do a lot of just like video production kind of tutorials. And so I found this one on just editing voice. So like for voiceovers, so just say editing audio for video.
Yeah.
And it was really good because it was like just the right amount of information where it was enough that like it'll definitely give you some things that you can do to up your game and kind of get to that next level, but not so much that it becomes overwhelming or intimidating and or that you're going to have to like, you know, spend hours and hours doing it. It's just like a few very practical tips that you can like easily implement. So I thought it was, if you were doing something like we're doing, it's enough information. And
yeah,
it's just like just the right amount for somebody like that. So I think it's just, I don't know, Potato Jet editing voice. It's probably something like that.
Nice. All right. We're going to check that out. What about you, Ben? What do you got?
Well, other than geometric patterns and tessellation and those kind of things, which I kind of already covered.
Right.
I was going to say that Amazon TV show The Boys, which is...
That works. It's not Netflix.
Excellent. But yeah. Since I have to do another one, I hung out with a really smart dog this week. So one of my friends came and I did an Instagram post on it. My friend has a dog that's half border collie and half Australian cattle dog. And the dog's name is Einstein because it's smart.
Is that self-fulfilling or did they just wait like 3 years to name it?
I think they just knew right away. It has this trick that is very useful. It throws away trash.
Oh, wow.
So if you look on my Instagram post, and it's a carousel post, so you just swipe over it and you'll see a video. If the dog sees any sort of paper napkin on the floor, and if you show him where the trash can is, he'll remember exactly where the trash can is. Even in a house he just came into, you go, Einstein, trash, and you point to it. And then if you drop a paper towel or any kind of piece of paper, he instantly just grabs it and like just flies over and drops it into the trash can.
That's my paycheck.
I know, no. Well, it's funny. Diploma. Like we were eating dinner and Jesse had her napkin on her lap. He came over, took the napkin off her lap, went over, threw it in the trash, and then came back to her like, you know.
Be like, I did good.
Yeah, I did
good. Nice job, Einstein. I was using that.
So the owners were saying that it's really awesome if they have like a cold and there's like a lot of like Kleenexes and stuff lying around. He'll just like come in and be all excited because he has like tons of work to do where he just like does that. So I was thinking it would be so amazing having a dog like that in like a wood shop. Where you trained him to pick up all the offcuts and put him in a scrap bin. Like, he's just like running all around, like picking up scrap and moving it around. And
if
all
it's
that kind
oddly
of stuff.
Shaped and smaller than this in surface area, throw it away.
Yeah.
But
I know that dog would need a lot of discretion, but that would be amazing.
That's not really a useful recommendation. So I'll provide one more, and that is the podcast called Minor Details. Did I already talk about that?
I don't remember you talking about it.
It's a podcast on industrial design. So these guys aren't makers. They're professional designers that design all sorts of different products, everything from furniture to shoes and stuff like that. One of them I've been following for a long time, Nick Baker. He does a lot of really cool demos with virtual reality 3D modeling. So he'll put the headsets on and have like, you know, full on Nintendo Power Glove action going.
Yeah.
And he'll be like sculpting in the air. Like everything from shoe designs to furniture, and really great Instagram feed. And his, I think it's like Nick P. Baker or Nicholas P. Baker. But the podcast he does with another designer, forgive me, the name escapes me at the moment, is called Minor Details. It's short. It's brief. It's really great for anyone that's sort of design student or thinking about just getting started in a career in design. They talk a lot about like a lot of industry pitfalls, how to have a good portfolio and stuff like that. So awesome. It probably won't be the most entertaining thing for everyone, but a fantastic resource for people that like want to hear about design news. And they'll break down things like when the new Mac Pro came out. They'll just like talk about it from a design perspective and sort of give their critique and what they like and don't like.
I dig it. That's awesome. What's the show called one last time?
Minor Details.
Minor Details. Very cool. Miguel. All right. So this week I've got a couple.
Yep.
The first one, deepfakes.
Oh, like, man.
I know that that's everywhere. But there has been a few absolutely hilarious ones that I've seen recently that I've got to share. So the first one, you're going to need to find the YouTube title. It's called Bill Hader Channels Tom Cruise.
I've seen that.
So this is the guy that's from the show Barry on HBO. And prior to doing all that, he was on SNL. And he's sort of like their impressions guy, kind of how like Jimmy Fallon was and all that kind of stuff. And what they've done is they've taken footage of him on talk shows where he's doing impressions of other people, but then puts their actual face on him. So it's like him doing an impression of Tom Cruise in this case, or he did other ones with Arnold Schwarzenegger and a couple other people. Dude, these deep fake, especially the Tom Cruise one, because they've got like really similar skin tone and a similar face to begin with. It freaked me the heck out, man. Go ahead.
I thought those ones were cool because the way they did it too, because he's more like telling a story than just doing an imitation. So it like kind of bounces in and out of him being himself and then being Tom Cruise or whoever.
And they like so cleverly, shifts. I was about to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, they so cleverly shift the faces whenever he like glances away for a moment. So he'll be Tom Cruise, glance away and come back, and then it's back to his Bill Hader face.
Right.
Yeah, really, really clean, really amazing. And then the other one that I want to shout out though, the other deep fake is really quick. I just got to scroll up to my history. I'm trying to find it. Okay. This is the one you need to search. The title is Deep Fake. Theo Von, Chris D'Elia, and Brendan Schaub on the Jerry Springer Show.
Oh man,
this one
I gotta check.
Is hilarious, bro. It's really great. So if you're familiar with any of those comedians, you'll think that this is just like stupid funny. So check that out. It's Deepfake, Theo Von, Chris D'Elia, and Brendan Schaub on Jerry Springer.
And just to have one more to relate it back to woodworking, there's one that somebody made of Nick Offerman as everybody from the intro to Full House, which is very creepy.
Okay. All right. I'm going to check that one out because Nick Offerman is the man.
There you go. And Full House is the show.
Yep.
Not really.
But aside from that, there's a couple of things I'm looking forward to in my life. First, being...
gonna be a dad.
Ooh, no. I mean, hopefully at some point, but not too soon.
I'm looking very far into the distant future forward to it.
Yeah. A long-term obsession. I'm about to see the band This Will Destroy You in Oklahoma City. I've been wanting to see them for years, and I'm getting to on Wednesday. So look forward to the update on that at the end of the show next week.
You'll
hopefully
have seen them.
It's a banger. I will have seen them. And I will hopefully have loved them. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention, which is more just stupid stuff, is so you know how Will Ferrell is Ron Burgundy from Anchorman?
I know how he is.
Well, he's starting a podcast, and it's like the Ron Burgundy
podcast. Oh, as Ron Burgundy?
Which I'm sure is going to be just so over the top that it's kind of unlistenable. You know, it's just a little, it'll be a bit much, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But what he's been doing to promote it is as Ron Burgundy, he's going on like every late night show. So like Seth Meyers, Jimmy Fallon, you know, the British one, all of them. And instead of like just doing a normal interview, he goes up and does stand up comedy. But it's just like so bad, but in a really good way. It's hilarious. So he does like a prop comedy set that's just like corny as heck, but really, really funny. And then another one where, you know, it's just, it is really funny. So check it out. Just search Ron Burgundy stand up or Will Ferrell, whatever it is. I'm sure it's on trending anyways. But that's about it, guys. We appreciate y'all listening every week. I know this is your favorite show. And to make sure that we listen to more, where we have more people listen to us. Man, that was the worst segue in the world.
I like
Should
it.
I rewind and do that again?
No, keep going.
Go for it. Go for it. All right. You know what? I'm going to say it the right way, though.
Okay.
Thanks for making us a part of your weekly routine. To help us be a part of other people's weekly routine, you can give us a 5-star review on the iTunes app. The reason I say that is it just lets the app know that we're a decent show and that they should suggest us more often to people that listen to similar content. So we really appreciate that. And if you've got any topic suggestions or anything that you want us to answer, any burning questions, just hit us up individually on Instagram. I am at Modern Builds, and my name's Mike Montgomery. Chris Salamone is at Four Eyes Furniture, and Benjamin Ueda is at Benjamin Ueda. So hopefully you can find him there. But aside from that, thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.